Hi, everyone, and welcome to The Modern Cotton Story, sponsored by E3 Sustainable Cotton. I'm Jennifer Crumpler, Fiber Development Manager and Manager of the E3 Sustainable Cotton Program at BASF, and I'll be host of today's program. So today, I'm really excited for the next program in our series of podcasts that we call Authors and Editors Talk About Textile and Sustainability. With this special series, we'll get to introduce you, our listeners, to different editors and writers from many different trade publications throughout the supply chain, as well as other authors of books about the industry who are really making an impact. And I'm really excited because we do have so many talented people that we get to introduce you, our listeners, to. And I'm also joined today by industry consultant Bob Anishak. So, Bob, how are things going?
Jennifer, I'm happy it's not raining. To be very honest with you.
So, yeah. I know. So our listeners know, I know a lot of times we always talk about we do these podcasts in some crazy places. And today I'm down in Lubbock, Texas. And I tell you, I thought I was going to escape some of the humidity from North Carolina, but I think the humidity followed me to Lubbock. It's been 94 and humid and just not typical weather down here.
Very untypical. Wow.
Very. It is my honor today to introduce Maxine Bidet, author of the recently published phenomenal book I can't rave enough about, Unraveled, The Life and Death of a Garment, and director of the New Standards Institute. So we really, Maxine, really excited to have you here. Really want to talk and dive and deeper into Unraveled, which, again, if anyone knows me, I've recommended this book to many people. But before we get there and discuss this, I would wonder if you would mind just telling our listeners a little bit about your background.
Sure. And thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited for this conversation. And I was down in Lubbock for research for the book as well and have very fond memories of I'm there, but I'm sure we'll dive into that. But my background is a little twisty-turny. I started off in law, and that was a very brief journey as a lawyer. But I was kind of weaving my way between corporate law and nonprofit law. I worked at the United Nations. And then from there, I had an opportunity to work at the Rwandan Criminal Tribunal in Tanzania. So that brought me to Africa. And there I started working with artisans. And I was, at that time, I realized law was not going to be my journey.
Yeah.
Although my work most recently has circled back in that area. But so I started working with artisans and started a nonprofit working with artisans. And then through that, this was how I began my way into the clothing industry. That work then expanded into a for-profit company that I started with a friend of mine called Zadie, which was supposed to be a multi-brand destination that was telling the story behind great products. And then what we found with that company was that we couldn't find, this was again in 2012, so it was a while ago, but we couldn't find a company that knew their whole story. And so that was when we, with the company Zadie, decided to try it on our own. And we went and found ranchers and cotton farmers and spinners and weavers and dyers and cutters and sewers all in the U.S. And that was really then the kind of deep dive for us and me in my own personal journey into understanding and researching the impacts of the industry. And it was just in really trying to tell the story that I started to come across this information. And so that then led to kind of my current work today and to the book, which was, I decided that, the industry had such a large impact. And as an outsider to the industry, and somebody who I thought I was you know, a thoughtful person. I had no idea that like my fast fashion habit was contributing to, you know, both labor and environmental issues. And I was like, if I don't know, then who else knows? And so, you know, I decided that instead of working at a brand and producing more clothes, that the role that perhaps was needed was just to get information out there, not information coming from a brand, but just independent information coming from researchers, scientists, the, you know, the actual people, you know, farmers and ranchers and mill owners and mill workers and the cut and sew managers and workers, kind of what their actual own experience was. And so that then led me to the work that I'm doing now at the New Standard Institute. And along with that was the journey of writing this book.
Yeah, well, it's so funny because I was, you know, listening and reading your book and listening to your story. So for me, you know, that I loved your book. I wish I would have had it about a, you know, about 2 years ago. Because that's when I first started my journey into this space. Because for 20 years, I've worked in agriculture and I've worked with farmers and, you know, really, you know, working on that input side. And then kind of got interested in that, in, you know, downstream, like, all right, what happens? What really does happen? And I started talking to my farmers and others, and they're like, I don't know, we take it to the gin, I don't know. And so, you know, this is when I moved into that textile space. And, you know, it really was, the past year and a half has been, I feel like I've been back at college. And I was like, man, I mean, this has been a steeper learning curve, you know, this whole industry and space. And so it was, and I think for me, that's why I love the book so much, because it really just told every step by step what happens. And it's, you know, really eye-opening. And then a bigger piece is that it told like the story of the people behind every step of it. And so, again, it just, I loved it. And, you know, for me, someone in, you know, those in the ag space who haven't really thought about that downstream, it was just a phenomenal read and education side of it.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah. I mean, I really I wanted it to be the story of the people behind it, because they're we're humans with emotions.
Yeah.
I think we connect with that human side. And I certainly, doing the research, was just, you know, most inspired by the people behind everything and the struggles and challenges that everybody is facing. And then the researcher in me just wanted to make sure that, you know, I was backing everything up with data. So that's the attempt of the book, is really to lead with a story, but not have it be without backup.
Yeah.
You know, Maxine, I am also an enormous fan of Unraveled. I think you've done an amazing job. I'm an ancient guy. I've been in this business since beginning of time. And to see someone write about the multi-fiber arrangement, for example, just reams to me in terms of how you did your research, how you went about doing it, how you backed up all your information, what you were writing. I also, from reading your book, also got your passion about the people involved in the various aspects of the textile supply chain. And that supply chain can be pretty, pretty ugly at times. And frankly, not all that glamorous. It's the exact opposite of what I think a lot of consumers think of fashion and clothing and whatnot. You write incredibly well too. Would love to take pointers from you at some point. So, but one question I've got is, what prompted you to publish the book now?
Well, it's interesting because this was my first book, and the journey of writing this book has been a long one. You know, all of the research was done, I started it well over 2 years ago. I can tell in my mind where it was, because I started the journey while I was pregnant in Lubbock. And then I finished my research, and I think my daughter was about 4 months old when I was down in Ghana looking at the secondhand clothing market. That was the end of the research. So
that was quite a story, by the way. The Ghana story was quite
Yeah.
And so my daughter's 2.5 now. So it was about 3 years. Well, now the book's been published, but you know, the whole journey from beginning to publication was just about 3 years. And I wanted to know myself. You know, I through the journey of Zadie, the clothing company, I was able to really meet a lot of fantastic suppliers in the US that were really trying, you know, that were on the leading edge of doing the right thing. But I didn't know what the average supply chain looked like. And I thought in my role as director of the New Standard Institute, you know, which is working on advocating for change and providing guidance, I wanted to see firsthand and speak firsthand to the people and see with my own eyes. And so that was really the journey of starting to write this book, was honestly for myself to know. And then, you know, to share along with readers. And I also just, I knew that, you know, from my experience with Zadie, having had the opportunity to see a full supply chain, I never looked at my clothes, like I could never look at my clothes in the same way again. And so my hope in sharing that story, as you say, I go step by step by step of how the whole process works, that more people can see just how much goes into our, you know, each article of clothing. Mm-hmm. And if they do that, they're hopefully will build a stronger relationship and a more meaningful relationship with it.
Yeah. And it's so true. And it's really amazing too, when you start going deeper into everything, you really do becomes a personal thing. I know for me it does. And you know, the passion I have behind, you know, like you said, the people. And that's the one thing I think, you know, Maxine, that just came out so much, was that passion behind the people and the people's story. And for me, a lot of, you know, the piece working in the ag space, where I've worked a lot the past, you know, couple years, 2 years, it's been really telling that story of the farmers and why they do what they do, and that they do have a family that's living, you know, on that land and doing the thing. And it's just that passion comes through, and I can tell it definitely comes through your book. And, you know, I'd be curious to ask, you know, for our listeners who, you know, as they're listening and, you know, actually, you know, going out and going to buy the book after this, but, you know, do you have any sections or any parts of it when you were writing the book that you think about that really, you know, you'd like to highlight, because they just, you know, the ones that had, I guess, the deepest impact on you?
Well, it was, you know, this sounds like a cop-out answer, but it was all of it, you know.
Yeah.
It was putting all of those pieces together, you know. And I think this is fast forwarding a little bit, but, you know, after meeting with everybody and going around the world more, you know, to see the different suppliers, and then this moment at the top of a burning landfill in Accra in Ghana, seeing that clothing just burn up in flames. I think, you know, that moment for me, after having done all this travel and all of this research, I think was definitely like a personally impactful moment where, you know, you just like, what are we doing? You know, all of this for clothing that people have such a disposable relationship to it. And, you know, I think an earlier, you know, big environmental report had just been published a few days prior to that that moment for me, and so it was all the more kind of, what are we doing? And you know, as I was running away from this fire, literally running at that stage, thinking like, oh, this would just be a really dumb way to die.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
I'll say.
You know, I always thought when people talked about environmental issues and they talked about their children, like, you know, as somebody who didn't have kids, I was like, oh, that's so dramatic. But as like, it made me think about my daughter and I, you know, in all honesty, I get really scared for her, and the life, you know, the planet that we are leaving her. And, you know, with this book, the reason why I wanted to stick to people so much is that so much of this stuff becomes so politicized and on different teams, you know? And I thought, you know, when we just get down to the people level, the values that we all share, we can kind of break through this stuff together and see the, you know, the common challenges. You know, I think back to the farmers that I got to meet, including Carl Pepper down near Lubbock. And, you know, I'm in New York, as I already mentioned. Like, we tend to think like, well, why wouldn't everybody just go organic? Like, it's so obviously the right thing to do, right? But I wanted to speak to the farmers about like, why they, like, if it was so obvious to do, everyone would be doing mm-hmm. it. So like, what is it that is making them either do that or not do that? And I think we all, you know, like city slickers like me, you know, need to know what it takes and that mm-hmm. it's not a straightforward thing to do. And, you know, what kind of policies like we could support that would make that an easier transition if that is, you know, the right thing to be doing. So I don't know, that was a bit of a long winding answer, but
yeah,
you know, I think I can't highlight one piece of it. It was really all of it together and, you know, just seeing how much goes into a product and then just seeing it burn up in flames and knowing that we have now developed such a disposable relationship, I think to me was like a big moment.
Yeah.
The word dead stock comes to mind. Yeah. Yeah, if you've heard that before.
Yeah.
It's really interesting, Maxine, your whole story, for those who haven't read your book yet, it basically traces a pair of genes through the entire supply chain. So it starts in the field and then goes each step of the textile supply chain, spinning, weaving, and so forth, dyeing, finishing, and then to cut and sew, and then back to consumer land back in the U.S. So you end up with this huge supply chain that occurs. And then along with that, enormous environmental impact. The industry does have a very large environmental impact. Everybody disagrees about how large it is, but we all know it's there. But having said that, each step of the way, as you've mentioned, has been, you were touching on the lives of various people. I was particularly moved, besides Ghana, I was moved by the story you had with the woman in China mm-hmm. on the river. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that. When you actually saw the indigo process and then you saw the woman, you know, how you described her, I don't want to take words out of your mouth. It's your book, but it was very poignant how you wrote about that.
Thanks. Thank you. So in China, I was really looking at the textile production process. And then I was also visiting some denim wash houses as well there. And I got to visit a few facilities. One was planned in advance. Actually, several were planned in advance. You know, 5-star facilities with, you know, great water treatment plants. You know, really what you would hope to see in a mill. And then I worked with a fixer and pretended to be a buyer, which I used to have to do. So that wasn't so foreign to me. And I think I used my innocent looking pregnant.
You've got to use what's at your disposal, Maxine. Exactly. That is okay, you know?
just go deeper. So I went to, you know, a showroom of a sea of very acid washed ripped jeans. And the man said that they worked at the time with Forever 21, and I, by the style, I believed them. And you know, I just said like, oh, this is so interesting. Like, this is my first trip to China. I've never seen this process. Like, can you show me just how these are? Is it nearby? Can I just see how it's made? You know, he said, sure. And we walked upstairs in this very, you know, dingily lit office, not office block, industrial block, I should say. And that was, you know, there were just piles of half sewn together denim. And, you know, then I was like, oh, this is so interesting. But like, what happens before this? Like, where do you get the material from? And he said, oh, that's like, that happens down the road. I was like, I'm all the way here in China. Like, could I see it?
Yeah.
Off we went to both the, it was a denim mill and wash house. And that, just the ride over was fascinating. His driver, the manager's driver, was watching three different movies.
On that is so funny.
So that was safe.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know. I always found like sometimes when you go and I think my first thing we're like, okay, is this really safe? You know, you're bumper to bumper traffic and everybody will slam into you, drive around, go around. I'm like, wait, what is happening?
So just texting and watching movies. And
yeah.
But I got to the, after looking at the weaving and dyeing process, we went to the wash house. And I was very lucky to be wearing rubber-soled shoes that day because it was just chemicals sloshing out of the washers. This obviously a blue color. The people spraying the finishing agents were not wearing masks. Just, you know, I think what one imagines an unregulated facility to look like. And then, you know, even going up the steps to where the spraying was happening for the finishing, you know, it was missing stairs. And I think even the driver who was like guiding us around kind of looked at me, pregnant lady, being like, what are you doing? And then looked at myself and was like, oh, I should probably head out. And so we said goodbye to the manager and the driver at that stage. And I just walked around the perimeter, and I saw on my iPhone that it was along a river. And so I went to the river and I just saw those effluents just jutting directly out into this very oil slickened river. And I think it's just for people who haven't, you know, visited in industrial town cities. You know, I live on the East River in Brooklyn that is adjacent to Manhattan, and it is not considered a very clean river, but it's blue, right? I'm looking at a blue river. And the rivers that you see here are all in China, in these industrial cities, are all varying shades of black and dark gray. And this one was, and I later traveled with an environmentalist to that same river, and he was trying to convince me that it was clean. And I was like, my eyes are burning and I am seeing the effluents directly with my own eyes. And he just took me to even worse rivers after that, which then I understood what he meant. It was all relative, I suppose. But on this black oil slick river that was being dumped with effluents, you know, I walked along the river, and I was just struck that there were farm plots along that river. And I saw this woman wearing, you know, ballet flats, like, you know, in her farm plot. And I just thought, oh my God, people are eating the food, you know, produce that is coming from utilizing this water. And then I went, you know, once I went back and did the research, you know, there's ample research on the effects of utilizing polluted water like that. And it's really just devastating what it's doing. And, you know, speaking to that environmentalist, he said, he was younger than me. And he said his parents remember like when that river, you could swim in it and there were fish. And it's just, I think we forget, and, you know, we talked about the MFA and talk about history. Like, we just, I think, forget our awareness of just how recent all of this has been. You know, it's like, this isn't an inevitability of history. This is all extremely recent history.
That's it's very well put. Very astute observation.
Thanks. Yeah. You know, and it also, speaking to historians is like therapy to me, because it also, you know, you realize they kind of laugh at, you know, when I say like, oh my God, we're never going to get out of this. This is crazy. They're like, this is a blip in a moment in history. You know,
right.
How was your conversations with Sven Beckert?
That's who I'm referring to.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I had to ask that. He and I were pen pals for a long time.
Yeah.
So
he is terrific, and he was the one giving me that pep talk.
He's a brilliant guy.
Yeah. He wrote Empire of Cotton.
Amazing history.
Which is a fantastic history. And so you know, when you look at that long lens of history, you do see that these are things are not an inevitable future, and that we can change them if we decide to.
Very, very cool. Hey, let me ask, Jennifer, you have something?
No, go ahead. Baba, go ahead.
No, you know, again, I just, after hearing, you know, again, I was really moved by that story with the woman and the way you described that and set that up with the description of the river and so on. But I had to ask two questions for you. One was, how do you define sustainability? And secondly, you've established this new standards institute, and I assume you established that to help develop metrics and data to support your definition of sustainability, I guess. And was just curious, you know, what's kind of the tie-in?
Yeah. So that's always a very difficult question. And in terms of defining sustainability, I tend to do that by not defining it. I feel like it's become such a watered down word, in the same way that I think kind of circular and regenerative and, you know, these other terms have become that I...
Good marketing.
I tend to avoid that word. I'd be curious to see how many times it pops up in the book. It's sometimes unavoidable, but I really try to just laser in on impacts, what those impacts are, and, you know, how can the negative impacts be reduced? And when I'm thinking about impacts, I'm thinking about greenhouse gas emissions. I'm thinking about chemical use and regulation. I'm thinking about labor practices and wages specifically. And so I think helps me get grounded in what are we actually talking about, by zeroing in on the impact areas. And then that connects to the work that we're doing at the New Standard Institute, is to, you know, what can we do to facilitate a reduction of those negative impacts. And that is by providing guidance, not just with brands, but with citizens, with legislators, and significantly also with media. You know, what are the right questions? I think there's been a while, you know, where when I started Zadie back in 2012, very few people, nobody in like mainstream media or seemed to care about the issues of the fashion industry. And luckily that is now changing. And the fashion industry itself, I think, has also just seen that citizens really care, their potential customers. And so they've marketed a lot of stuff But there hasn't, you know, there's been the space that I felt was missing, and what we're hoping, you know, hope to be filling with the new Standard Institute is that kind of independent referee, that it's, we're really trying to be the voice of the scientists, the researchers, and, you know, the actual people working directly, you know, in the field, and hopefully through clear information, help facilitate the media's role in helping citizens do the right thing, and ultimately helping legislators do the right thing as well.
Yeah, and you know, and that's so interesting to me, Maxine, because that was really for me the driving force in why I do what I do every day. So when I, you know, being in the ag space for so long, and I've kind of moved into this downstream textile space, working and trying to help connect the dots, the one thing I found is the lack of data, the lack of truth and data. You know, I was kind of blown away that, you know, coming from the scientific world in that space, when you move kind of downstream, there's really no regulations or rules around what can be put on a label, what can, you know, be claimed, no matter if there's a data or not. You know, if we talk about organic cotton, everybody just puts that on a label and it's, well, okay, what do you, where is that coming? How do you know? What are you defining as organic? And so for me, that's where I've spent a lot of time, and we have at E3 is, all right, hey, let's get the data behind what we're doing. Let's bring that data, the environmental impact, what's happening. And so I think you're right. It's just been kind of a word that's been thrown around with for sustainability or whatever, with no true meaning behind it. And so, you know, I love that that's, you know, what you guys are doing and talking about, you know, the impacts of what's happening and the data behind it. Because when you really looked at the supply chain and how long, you know, really a 10,000 mile supply chain or however long, you know, your trips around the world, you know, talk about a carbon footprint and talk about an impact on things. And so I think that that is where I'm most excited to see, you know, some of the things happening and what's to come. You know, and I guess, you know, I guess my question to that be, you know, do you think that with your book, do you see another book in your future, or or is that something still to be determined? Because I feel like there's so many other things, you know, to go down. And like, you know, Bob said, it was, you know, your writing was so great to follow along with, and the story is so compelling.
Well, that's very kind of you. It's funny, I was recently in lucky to be in Ecuador with my family, and I went to a cocoa plantation, and you know, I was right away like taking pictures, asking questions. The manager of the it was a Rainforest Alliance certified facility, and so I was to be an ambassador for the Rainforest Alliance, so I was asking all these kind of technical questions. He's like, "Who are you?" These type of questions. But you know, I posted a story of the process from beginning to end on my in my own just personal Instagram stories, and then I got comments back like, "Oh, is that your next book?" And I was like,
"That's really funny." That's really funny.
I do love a supply chain. I find it, you know, I'm genuinely fascinated by how it all comes together. I don't think there's so much work to be done at the new Standard Institute that I shouldn't jump to cocoa supply chains just yet. So maybe in the distant future, but for right now, the focus really is, you know, leveraging the story of the book to just bring more people in. And that's what we're trying to do at NSI, is to both bring that research, highlight all the research that still needs to be done, and bring new people into the fold and think about new ways of communicating. So we're not, you know, sitting in our own different silo, whether that's the ag silo or the textile silo or the advocacy silo. You know, our aim is to really speak to your average citizen who is wearing clothing, obviously, but might not be engaged in these issues yet. And I do think it's beyond clothing. You know, clothing tells the story of the world. And I think it's a great vehicle to understand kind of even, you know, sense and social sense, like how it is how we are where we are today, and hopefully where we can go as a result of that understanding.
Yeah, well, Maxine, I could talk to you for hours, but I think we are about out of time. And so we'll
Jennifer, I've got to say one thing to Maxine.
Okay.
All right, and this will be great for the success of her book. Congratulations on making the FT, the Financial Times, long list.
Thank you.
And hopefully that'll become the short list. And
yeah.
Hopefully you win it. Maybe that'll help defer all the costs you incurred traveling around the world to actually write the book in the first place.
Thank you.
How about that? Thanks.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And I'm glad you said that, Bob, because, I was going to mention that too. You know, it's so exciting. And I think the biggest thing, you know, Maxine, I think with that success, I think it's one of those that, you know, to me, it's like, okay, you know, you're doing right when, you know, the success and the acceptance of the book and or any of the work you're doing, because I think you're right. We are in a time where consumers, they want to know more. Yeah. And I think their values are going deeper. And, you know, some of the new demographic of, you know, the new generation's coming. It's, you know, they want to know more and they want to go deeper and not just that surface level of what something is claiming to be. So, yes, again, congratulations on that. And, you know, thank you so much for coming on and the great discussion. And, you know, I would like to mention, you know, Unraveled, it is available at your favorite bookstore, online, you know, audiobooks. And definitely pick it up and, you know, read the book and just kind of challenge yourself. So our listeners, you know, just kind of challenge yourself. And, you know, and Maxine, what is the best way should our listeners, you know, want to learn more about the New Standards Institute or, you know, more about some of the work you're doing? What is the best way for them to find that information?
Yeah, thank you for asking. You can head to newstandardinstitute.org or on social media, our handle is NSI Fashion 2030.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, again, thank you. And I'd also like to thank you, our listeners, for joining us. And I really hope that you enjoyed today's show as much as I did. And should you have questions about the E3 Sustainable Cotton Program, please email me at e3cotton@basf.com. Also, don't forget to visit us on Instagram and Facebook, as well as, you know, don't forget to follow along with our E3 Cotton Challenge to see where we've challenged you guys to plant your 100% cotton t-shirt in the ground and see the impact on the environment versus you know, synthetic and other choices. So again, thanks so much, everyone, and see you next time.